It's a little bit less than Shloshim Yom Kodem, so we're kind of din of Shloshim Yom Kodem, and to discuss some of the issues that will come up when a person is in the position of being a Moira Halacha for a Tzibur. Mishnevura writes in Tov Reish and Ches that he calls Achrayim, the Kosu Achrayim, V'tzorach Kol Moira Liyos Dinim Elu. The halachas of what happens if a person takes ill on Yom Kippur, shigurim b'fiv, mi be'erev Yom Kippur, ki yochol yuchal liyois, the b'shiyais ma'ad yesh bo yisakonis nafoshes. So he says that when it comes to the person who Rachman al-Sana declines on Yom Kippur, what happens before Yom Kippur, so one has time to discuss with doctors, to discuss with the mer halacha what to do. But it could be that the shalom will come of Yom Kippur itself. The im hu she'ela shamayra tzarech la'ayin adin v'yeh sham acher boki she'idei la'ashim. The person will, the rabbi is in a position where the shalom comes up Yom Kippur. So he says the stakes are very, very, very high. Rachman al-Islan, if we are too strict, it could cause a person to become very, very sick. Rachman al-Islan. And if we don't call it right, then a person could be nichshal in eating Yom Kippur. So it's one of the areas of halacha that have to be shgurim b'fiv, one of the many areas of halacha, probably in every area of halacha, that one's humility has to be guiding a person. It's true with every area of halacha, but it becomes readily apparent. He says, if the mar halacha is a shayla on Yom Kippur, and there is somebody else who happens to know the halacha very, very well, this is one of the cases where in cholkim b'zeh kovid l'rav, that the kovid of the position does not become a factor. He says there are other areas as well. For example, halachas of pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. Right? So some of the areas that have to be shigurim b'fiv. So we'll take a little bit of time to discuss some of the ideas so you'll know how to prepare yourself for your careers later on as Rabbanim, that Bechlal is important to have in the Rabbanis, to have go-to people, to have doctors that you can discuss things very, very openly and straightforwardly. Doctors are also humble people and do the research, and they don't shoot from the hip all the time, and that they appreciate that how to give over information and ideas and what's scientific and what's anecdotal. It's important over time you learn which doctors are the doctors that are people that can really help you out in understanding how to pasken. One of the most common issues that come up, the basics, so we all know that pikuach nefesh is doicha every halacha, so it's doicha except for the gilei rosh v'chazamim and Avodah Zarah, but Yom Kippur is one of the halachas that Pikuach Nefesh is Deicha, and much of the work of a Rav when it comes to answering the questions before Yom Kippur is, number one, to convince the people who have to eat that it's a mitzvah to eat, and to remind the people from what's also to eat that they shouldn't be eating. The two things are both very textured. But a person is Rachman al-Tzal in a situation where the doctors say that if that person doesn't eat on Yom Kippur, I mean, they miss the one day of food, that they, God forbid, could be put into a situation of sakonis nefashos. The Tshuvas van Hugges from Moshe Sternbach says we should really phrase it a little bit differently. We should ask whether eating on Yom Kippur will get them out of Sakonis Nefash. In other words, both are correct. If a person, if God forbid, by not eating on Yom Kippur, they will get sicker and be in a situation of Sakonis Nefash, they have to eat. And alternatively, if by abstaining from eating, they lose the opportunity to become stronger and get out of a Sakana, it's also a little bit of a different nuance. But very often the job of a Rav before Yom Kippur is to remind people that if they are b'sakana, then there's no mitzvah to fast, and if they are b'sakana, even a suffix sakana, then they're mechuyif to eat. That's number one. Number two is often you have to remind people that the fast is more important than being in shul. This is an issue that Klal Yisrael lit up because it speaks the high level of Klal Yisrael, but it's an issue that all the way back to the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer said, you also have to explain to people. He was in a situation where there was an epidemic, and he said, you have to explain to people that if they're able to fast at home and they will miss entire Tefillah B'Tzibur, then it's more important to fast at home and miss Tefillah B'Tzibur than to eat and be in the Tzibur and to have being the tzibur for Ne'ilah, and being the tzibur for Marakoya, and being the tzibur for some of the most moving parts for Achila, Kelev, Davening. So that's the hard thing for people to appreciate, because the Yom HaDin, and Tefillah is the way in which we'll be Zoichem B'Din. So you have to remind people, doing mitzvahs, and following the priority that the Baruch Hu gives us, that's the biggest achus a person can have. So the fast is the biggest achus. So it's then not often an easy sell, but you have to work on it and explain that to people. And then there is the other side of the spectrum, which is a more modern situation, where people, the two errors that people often make. One is that people are under the come to the erroneous impression that if they eat bishurim, so then that's not an iser deraisa. So that's something that we've sort of locked ourselves into, because Baruch Hashem, people are very well educated, so they know there's a din of shurim, but they make the mistake. Both balabatim and doctors often make the mistake to think that shurim is like a din derabbanan. That's for kids. They're very important people to realize that the bar of eating Yom Kippur, whether it's shiurim or not shiurim, the bar is the same. Right? If a person is a chaylim mesukan, then they can eat, and then we try to figure out whether they can eat b'shiurim. Right? So again, let's explain a little better. That the Mishnah says, machilin akal akal koidim, that when a person has to eat in Yom Kippur, so we try to reduce the Chaymer Ha'iser. So how do we reduce the Chaymer Ha'iser? If a person only eats, but they need to eat, Achrayim say, if a person only needs to drink, doesn't need to eat, then they should drink. There are Achrayim who say, that I don't think this is Mekubal Halacha L'Maisa, that if they only need to drink water, they shouldn't drink orange juice. And I'm not sure if that's Mekubal. I think for carrots, that if they, once they're drinking, they're drinking. And if they can drink with calories, then it's better than having to eat. So, machilin akala kalkaidim. So, one of the major rules of akala kalkaidim is that we assume that if a person eats and is chayv einshin, that's a more chomerdik iser than if he eats without being chayv einshin. So, we pass in chasi shir osim in atara. So, eating a smallest amount is a maisa achila is an iser deraisa. And it has to be pikuach nefesh, in order to be able to eat. But once a person is eating, so if they can eat pachas mikashir. So pachas mikashir means less than a keseves in more time than an achilas lepras, or drinking less than a revius in more time. Sorry?
Revius or malalugma?
It's, yeah, right. It's malalugma, but lemaisa. It is malalugma, that's correct. So the so we instruct people to eat, let's say, we instruct people on Yom Kippur to envision a large grape as being a safe kesevis. Kesevis is larger, but to be safe. So envision a cubic inch of chocolate or something, because that gives a lot of energy, like a grape's worth. Or to envision like a shot glass, because that's a safe malilugma, right? So, and we instruct people that if they can have enough to eat or drink by spacing it out for 9 minutes apart, that's the Chassam Sefer's preferred approach to Achilas Chatzi Pras. Shulchan Aruch has either 3 eggs or 4 eggs. So the Chasam Sofer says we should try for 9 minutes apart, but the other extreme is for 2 minutes apart. And the Alter Rebbe is quoted as, I think, 7 minutes apart, and the Aruch HaShulchan maybe 8 minutes apart. The Aruch HaShulchan is quoted as 6 minutes apart. I think the Kav Nirav, Shulchan Aspek, they're also 6 minutes apart. And Rav Moshe Think writes that if one can't do, if these don't work, one has to have more drink, or more than when there's 3 minutes apart, the Chasam Sofer 2 minutes apart. So you have, that's the range. But we start with trying to do it 9 minutes apart. The doctors point out that the average amount of fluid that a person needs per day, I think, is 1.5 liters. So if you envision that the large bottle of a 2-liter bottle, you don't need the full 2 liters over the course of a day. So, and you can envision that the part of your 1.5 liters you can get after taste before you go to sleep. So the average amount that a person needs to drink in order not to be dehydrated is not so much if they're starting off in a good place, if they're not dehydrated already, and if they drank a lot before Yom Kippur. So spacing it out 9 minutes apart should work for most situations when a person is coming in basically in a better state. So the point that we're making is that a chatzi shir osam in haTorah. However, we assume, we understand, if Kadosh Baruch Hu says that the person violates the achila in a certain way and he's chayiv oinshin, that's a more chomerdik way of violating. The famous ha'orah that the Brisk Rav quotes from Chaim is saying that he doesn't understand ma'achilin ha'kal ha'kal, because if Shonim say that pikuach nefesh is doicha, and is doicha kol tzorchov. So we're not clear what kol tzorchov is, but l'chora kol tzorchov certainly is eating. So it's hard to say tzorchov is less than a keseves every 9 minutes. So there are those who quote Reb Chaim thought one can be makel on shiurim. That's hard. You can't say that because that's mefurish. That we are machilin akal akal. So the different ways of being the tarets of Chaim. But the point that we're making is that over time, people have come to understand erroneously that you'll have shiurim and you'll still have a full Yom Kippur. So that it's something we have to instruct people that eating b'shiurim is an isa deraisa, and you can only eat b'shiurim if, by not eating, one will be mistaken, or one's sakana will become stronger, or one will not climb out of a sakana. Now, once a person is allowed to eat, then we figure out whether eating bishurim is good enough. Once a doctor says, this person has to eat, this person achayla mesukin, this person is just became a diabetic Arab Yom Kippur, we haven't been regulated him yet. Right, this person, Rachman is on chemotherapy, he's having a terrible reaction. This person is continuously dehydrating, continuously has chronic dehydration. So whatever, if the doctor says this person has a heart pressure which they can't control, so blood pressure they can't control, whatever the situation is, that they have a pregnant woman that is continuously dehydrating. You have a pregnant woman who is having contractions and is not term. So in all those situations, so the halach is that the person has a mitzvah for the person to eat. But then we ask the doctor if the person takes the liquids once every 9 minutes, will that satisfy their needs? Say no, once every 6 minutes. Well, that satisfies their needs. It's every 4 minutes. So the doctor will make a cheshbon, right? And figure out. Most doctors will say, look, as long as you get your 1.5 liter, it doesn't matter how slowly you take it. So then we've accomplished that we are being oiver Yom Kippur, they rise on a lower level. But that's that has to be understood. But that's the important thing that every Orlin can attest to, every Shul Rav can attest to, that we are the Malach of Erev Yom Kippur. One is those who have to eat, to be miyashev al daitam, that this is the mitzvah, this is the return of Boire, that they should eat. And then those who are not supposed to be eating, that even shurim is something which is not acceptable for them. And this is one of the bederach klal, one of the avodas of a rav, is to restore some of the hergish towards Yom Kippur. In other words, that the rabbanim are older than me, so most of their work at Yom Kippur was convincing European Jews that they're not well, and they had a European Jew who was already on in years, and the doctor said this guy has to eat, the malacha was prevailing upon them to eat. I had an older Jew in my community many years ago, he was a European Jew. He had gone through a tekufa in his life where he wasn't shomer mitzvahs, he came back with shomer mitzvahs, and the doctor said he has to eat, otherwise he's going to be terribly sakana. I had to beg him. And even then, I'm not sure it was successful. Right? There was a certain hergish. The Rav, and he was criticized for this. The Rav, there were certain years where he went on intravenous. And he was criticized. It's true from Rav Waldenberg, Shemati. I heard that one of the great minds of Chutz Laaretz, and he thought it was incorrect. Because Baruch Hu said, they're supposed to eat. So it's without question. The Rav understood they were supposed to eat, but there was an emotional hergish. And that's the Rav with the b'chol toikev sechusa, the genius that he was, and the rational person he was. There's a certain hergish. So I'm not saying it's correct, but we have, with the advanced yeshiva education that we have, and people know that they rise to their bone to goch nefesh. So the hergish of Hakad Yom Kippur is unfortunately ebbing away. So one of the avoidus of a Rav is to somehow get back to this point where we're following the halacha kit tikunai, and those who are supposed to eat are eating, and it's sofek, sofek guch nefesh l'kulam. Okay. You have to be, but when there's no sofek, when the doctor says that they don't have to eat, one of the issues that comes up is a person's on medication. So one of the jobs of a rov is around now to start announcing to people that if you take medicine once a day, so the ideal time to take certain medications before you go to sleep, and certain medications before you get up in the morning. That's the ideal time, okay? But doctors will often say to you, that's the ideal time. But you won't get into trouble if you take your medicine 3 hours late, 3 hours early. Every person on medication, on daily medication, knows that sometimes they take it late, and they do okay. So to discuss with the doctor whether they can tweak their schedule and take the medication before Shkia and after Tzeis, before Shkia, Erev Yom Kippur, and after Tzeis, Yom Kippur. So you can't do that on 2 days before Yom Kippur. But if you speak to the doctor now, the doctor may say, yeah, if you, over the next few weeks, if you slowly change your schedule so that you can take it by Shkia, and by Tzeis, and then after Yom Kippur, you go slowly change back to the ideal time, you'll be fine. So that's something for a chacham in a bereisha. Person can start doing that now. So but one of the issues that comes up is where the instructions that come with the medication is must be taken with food. So you have to catch a patient doctor who'll give you some time, and you have to be mavara. What does it mean taking with food? So it could mean one of three things. It could mean that that's an ideal situation. It could mean that a person will have an upset stomach if he takes without food. Okay. Nope. So that's not a reason to eat in Yom Kippur. A person will be upset, will be nauseous, it's not great, but not a reason to take the medication, and you don't eat. Sometimes it means that a person could develop an ulcer if they take the medicine without food. Ask the doctor, if once a year the person takes the medicine without food, is there a chashash of an ulcer or a colitis or something? So sometimes the doctor will say, yeah. Yeah. So the one-time deal could... But most of the time the doctor will say, one time? There's not going to be any problem. Okay, that's an important thing. Sometimes the medicine is ineffective because it doesn't get distributed towards the body because there's no food for it to be. So that's a different picture. Then he's saying the medicine is killing you, don't take it if you don't eat. So then once again, I have to ask the doctor, and once a year, whatever, however the conversation plays out, it plays out. But those, and then that will determine whether the person can eat Yom Kippur. So these are all things that have to be discussed before the Yom HaKadosh. One of the issues which is on your plate, will be in your plate much, much more than it was 50, 60 years ago, was pregnant women. Before, when I was a little kid, so the pregnant women fasted Yom Kippur, because that's what it said in Shulchan Aruch. And that's the way it was. There were always doctors who were cutting corners. And I mean there were always doctors who were nervous and instructed otherwise. But the issue came to a head sometime, I believe, in the 70s. The 70s, so there was a Yerushalmi Jew, I think his name was Goldberg, he wrote the Sefer that you're all familiar with, the Pnei Baruch, because the Pnei Baruch became the art scroll Sefer on Avelis. So the art scroll Avelis Sefer was a translation of Pnei Baruch. Pnei Baruch was really a second volume. The first volume was the Halachis Avaninus. The Halachis that happened Mishas Ptira. So Pnei Baruch is a chunky volume, but the first volume of Pnei Baruch was a not well-known, very, very thin volume. And what happens, a person dies on Shabbos, and Erev Shabbos, and Yom Kippur, and Yom Tov, every Sif is a... And some of the Halachis Avaninus. And the Haskoma to that Sefer was given by Rabbi Yaakov Fisher. Yaakov Fisher was one of the Gedolei Yerushalayim. You're more familiar with Shlomo Fisher. Shlomo Fisher was a Rashiv in Itri, and was also one of the Gedolei Yerushalayim, and is one of the fascinating, all-encompassing mind, and the person whose Hasmada is legendary. Shlomo Fisher would spend most of the nights in the yeshiva. He only came home, I think, Thursday nights, till Matzoi Shabbos, I think. Don't try this at home. But he had an amazing Rebbetzin. So Thursday night, they had a very, very long, not a very long, but they had that was Muktash. He came home Thursday nights and they ate together, spent time together. But Matzai Shabbos, the people who were there Matzai Shabbos when he would leave, so he would take leave of his wife. He said, I have to go. Because he would say, because I have to become a Talmud Chacham, because that's part of the deal Nixuva. I told you to become a Talmud Chacham. So she would say to him, after all these years, I've been living decades and decades, and you leave Motzei Shabbos, and you say, you're not a Talmud Chacham yet. What's going on? He would say, you're right, it's a serious problem. I better get going to yeshiva. So, but his brother, Rabbi Yaakov Fisher, was also a very, very beloved Yerushalmi Poisek. He used to have a slot in Paskin. His slot was from 1 to 2, I think, in the Beis Hayra. I was Zeicha to learn under Sholem Eisen. He had the slot from 10 to 12. So he would tell me that Yerushalmi Jews knew that how he passed and Yaakov Fisher passed him. So Shalom Eisen was very machmer on the first day of the Shiva Nikiyim, and Yaakov Fisher was more meikel. So he would tell me that if a person has a shayla on the first day, they would stand in line. Had a long line. They would stand in line. But if it was after that, they knew to come to me, I have a shorter line. So Yaakov Fisher then gave the Haskama. At the end of the Haskama, he wrote, "Achshav ki yom hazeh shenechleshu adoros," that we are in a weaker situation now. The asorois rabbi shel noshim apilois al yedei atainis, and scores of women have miscarriages because of the fast. Tzrich in kol anoshim hamu borois ad achodesh ad shi lechol b'yem b'gipurim pochiz mikashir. So all pregnant women until the ninth month have to eat pochiz mikashir yom kippur. Okay, so this was a halachic bomb. Number one, it wasn't a full-fledged truma, it was a ha'orma at the end of Askama. And this was not keneged Shulchan Aruch, because he said, achshav shenech l'shu adoros. And he had some experiences where people had apolos. They had, and therefore he paskin this way. So this was a major Yerushalmi poisek. He has several svarim, I think called Evin Yisrael. He has svarim and Rambam and svarim and Shuvas. So this became a very, very contentious issue. Those who saw Yaakov Fisher, they saw the tshuva, were thrown into a quandary, one of the daily Yerushalayim, saying a non-conventional psak, and a person who was not known for non-conventional psak. So Rav Waldenberg, he was the one who penned the tshuva that took on Yaakov Fisher, Tzitz Eliezer. So already towards the end of the life, that says he was already an older man, Elozer Waldenberg, Chelik Yud Zayin. Elozer Waldenberg was the poisek of halacha and refuah bizmanoi. In his time, he was a yachid miyucha. There weren't many people who were writing in Keseder. Every single volume has refuah issues. So he became one of the defining personalities of poiskim and medical issues. At Adiyev is there. He's always referred to, people who agree and disagree with him. But the famous Tay-Sachs tshuva of Hapola, of a baby is a Tay-Sachs baby. Very, 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 he allowed the Hapola on the Tay-Sachs baby. So that Bishah Toy, it was against the mainstream. And he was taken to task for it. And he was heavily criticized. Over time, his tshuva has become much more of the mainstream and is heavily, heavily relied upon. But Keseder, all the issues of Shabbos and Refuah, so he was a definitive sefer. The eighth volume of the Tzitz Eliezer became like a separate sefer on its own because it was almost all about Simen Tezvav. That's a famous that everybody knows. Chelik Ches Simen Tezvav. So, and he was the Rav of Shari Tzedek. Now, it was Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman, I don't know exactly what happened. I think there was some issue. He had to step down for some sheet that he had. Rav Waldenberg became the Rav of Shari Tzedek, and then the Yachar Rav, there was a vacuum, and then Rav Shweiss. Shlita stepped in now, and he has that position. So Rav Waldenberg wrote in Chelik Yitzayin, he says that first of all, he questions the information that Yisrael Fisher was working with. Because he says that it's a miyuta de miyuta, it's a very, very small group of people who have polos because of Yom Kippur. He said, even if Yaakov Fisher is right, even if there were scores of women, so that he says that means that over Rav Yaakov Fisher's tenure as a Rav, he was a Rav in Yerushalayim for decades. So he said, in Yerushalayim, there were tens of thousands, in Eretz Yisrael, tens of thousands of women who were pregnant every year. Right? Over the course of the course, so if he met scores of women, that still is a tipa shebiyam of the people that had successful pregnancies. So he questioned whether Rav Fisher's science is correct. We can add to the question that Rav Waldenberg said is that we can add to that because Lamasa. When questions come to you about a woman who is pregnant, so you'll have to decide if you're going to follow Yaakov Fisher, you're going to follow the mahalach that we're going to develop. But we're going to develop a mahalach where you're going to ask, you'll ask this woman, number one, has she ever had preterm deliveries? You'll ask her whether she has had contractions. You'll ask her whether she has a staining. You'll tell her that if she has certain siman, you will instruct this pregnant woman. So it's very possible that the scores of women that had apolos in Yom Kippur are people who didn't go to a rov, and they didn't get the vetted. And maybe many of those women would have been told, you're not supposed to be fasting. So the information that Rav Fish is working with, is Valdemar said, is very scanty and skeptical if that is information that we can work with to be keveya adin that nechleshu adarais, and we're going to therefore paskin against what it says in Shulchan Aruch. And then, in addition to Rav Goldenberg's question, so Rabbi Bleich wrote an article many years ago. This goes back to the early 80s. He writes in his contemporary, then it's, I think, the fourth volume. So he writes that he Rabbi Bleich is really responding to research that was published in the early 80s, late 70s, that research that recorded the numbers of women who went into labor on Yom Kippur. In other words, in Shaarei Tzedek, they saw that more women gave birth on Yud Aleph Tishrei than on other days, right? So the numbers bumped up. So the so that would seem to indicate that the fast, the dehydration of the fast, is advancing a woman going into labor. Okay, so that obviously is something that's very, very concerning. However, Rabbi Bleich points out that if you look at the studies that were done, so it's all women who are close to term. They're women, I think, in the eighth month. So before the eighth month, there was not an increase in person going into labor, not a significant increase. So that already reduces the question. And towards the end of the ninth month, so it's widely accepted that that could send a woman into term, but then most doctors will be comfortable with her going into labor. So it gets scary to a rav. The eighth month is a scary time, because then there would be some indications that there is an increase. It could be. There was another article that was published in which Rabbi Bleich reports about whether the fasting, whether the dehydration could cause any damage to the uber. And again, Rabbi Bleich, I believe correctly, he debunks the validity of those studies, but again, one has to look at them and look at Rabbi Bleich's article. And then more recently, there was another article, we discussed this now 2 years ago, another article that came out about, which also has to be brought on Shulchan Malachim. But that's the hour number one, is the science on which Rabbi Fisher based his approach. Was the science correct? And then Rav Waldenberg writes that if one is going to take the approach that nechleshu adareis nishtanu atvaim, he says that you require a kenes, you require a kind of one Yerushalmi as great as Rav Fisher was. But one Rav can't make a statement that nechleshu adareis. That's the kind of thing. You bring Anshei Mada together, you bring Sain, you bring Ravana together, you have a kinos before you announce that Nishtanu Atvam. That's something that has to be discussed. So Rav Waldenberg was very, very critical of Fisher's approach, and he thought that it was a chashash rochik, and even though we are choshesh v'tzavik b'koch nefesh, he thought that if a person, if a muberes is well hydrated before, and if she's well vetted as to whether she should be fasting or not, so then one should continue to the psak of Shulchan Aruch, and we're not at the stage where we should change the din. However, it does mean that. And Rav Avadya Yosef also wrote that he thought that the psak of Rav Fisher was to say as a heter kloli was a kula yaseira. Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote about Tisha B'Av. He's quoted, and I think the Sefer Elichos Besa, that when there's a heat wave, so Mubaris should eat on a Tisha B'Av. So it clearly shows that Rav Shlomo Zalman also didn't accept Rav Yaakov Fisher's mahalach. And that's the hayira that Rav Waldenberg comes to. He writes, "Lachen the daiti bora dover l'fi halacha ki ein laseis bozeh heter ba'oifin kloli." A person should not give a general heter to Alma Ubaris. And V'al Achas Kamo Shein LaHatzrich Oysan. And Fisher wrote very strongly. Fisher didn't write it's mut. He said you're supposed to eat. El Shiyesh L'Sei Seiro Lehen Ki B'chol Mikri Shel Chulsha. Oystia Me'a Matzava Normali Alein La'Soy She'ilas Chocham. But what we should tell women is that every pregnant woman whose doctor indicates that they should not be fasting, or every pregnant woman who has anything which is slightly not the usual for pregnancy, so then should bring that question to a Rav. And that's what the Rav now has to do, an intake for the pregnant woman. And there are several situations. So, for example, one situation, and the Rav is to work with the doctor to figure things out. If a woman calls and says, my doctor says I shouldn't fast, so then the question the Rav asks is this doctor saying this because of some specific aspect of your history, or is this doctor saying that every pregnant woman shouldn't fast? So if the doctor is saying that every pregnant woman shouldn't fast, then that does not become a substantial position legabe this woman and Yom Kippur, because we can still call the doctor and find out what study it's based on, and whether they appreciate that the bar of eating Yom Kippur is sakonis nefoshes, is that we're afraid that the pregnancy could be lost. We do follow the sheet. There is a machlekes apoyskin whether hapola is sakonis nefoshes, right? So is a hapola. One of the inconsistencies in Psak Halach, one of the seeming inconsistencies, one of the apparent inconsistencies, is that if a woman comes with a shaila about whether they can do a hapola, are they allowed to do a something's unusual with a pregnancy? It's probably another class. I don't know. Can wave somebody else. So Rav Moshe had a very high bar. Rav Moshe held that hayois were allowed to mechal Shabbos to save a pregnancy. So that means that losing a pregnancy is begeder sakonis nefashos, because otherwise you can't mechal Shabbos. And therefore, the bar of terminating a pregnancy has to be pikuach nefesh. If the mother's life was endangered by the pregnancy, then we do hapol. And other poskim, and Rav Moshe's position was the ruling position during the 70s, and then others began to disagree with Rav Moshe, Rav Waldenberg being one of the first ones. Rav Waldenberg allowed for the hapola for a Tay-Sachs baby. There was no sakona to the mother, and there was no added sakona. It meant that the baby will not live to after several years or something. But the basis for that mahalach was that the bar of a hapola is based on uber yerechimoy. So one of the apparent inconsistencies is that if you'd ask Rav Waldenberg whether you can mechal Shabbos to save a pregnancy, he would say yes. Can you eat Yom Kippur to save a pregnancy? He'd say yes. But he would say, can you terminate a pregnancy even though it wasn't a sakana? He would say also yes. So that why that is so, we'll leave for another time. But the But Rav Waldenberg is saying that if there is a chashash that we lose the pregnancy, something specific to this woman, so then she eats a Yom Kippur, she mechuyev to Yom Kippur. So we have to figure out, is this woman at a greater danger than other women? So one example could be, and this you find in the Rishonim, or Chas Chaim writes, that if a woman has had two miscarriages, and we don't know why there was the miscarriage. If we know there was a miscarriage because she had some kind of trauma, okay, so then that doesn't count. But if it were two undiagnosed miscarriages, or if it were diagnosed because she went into dehydration or something, so then this woman should eat during her third pregnancy if it turns out to be Yom Kippur. Now, it could be that one should be a little bit more nuanced. I'm not sure, Tarachi, and if the Hapola was the first two apolos were in the third week of pregnancy, and now she's in the seventh month of pregnancy. Tzarech in with the doctor whether the first two apolos have do indicate whether she has to break her fast. She should break her fast. There is another indication where a woman had preterm labor. It's her third pregnancy, and her first pregnancy, she went to labor during the eighth month. So does she have a predisposition to go into preterm labor? Preterm labor is a kind of safashi. She's in her sixth month. She goes into preterm labor. It's very, very dangerous for the mover. So there are studies about whether the history of an earlier pregnancy is a predictor. Does past performance indicate future performance? All right. So some doctors say it does, and some doctors say it depends on whether it's a one-time occurrence or it happened more than once, but that will be something that a rabbi has to take into account. And maybe because of that, the rabbi will say, we have to be matir. Let's say a woman is pregnant, and in this present pregnancy, she's had preterm labor, right? She's holding in the seventh month. And in the sixth month, she went to the hospital because she was in labor. And she had contractions. She was in contractions. So then this woman has to eat Yom Kippur. Because she certainly, this pregnancy, she's had preterm contractions. So then this, she certainly is at greater risk for going into labor. And if she's at a time when the baby is not before the 38th week, the doctor signs off that this baby is ready to be delivered, okay? So then we may have her fast. But if before that, then she would not be allowed to fast. The woman had staining during this pregnancy. So that would be an indication that she has a predisposition to having an early labor. Now that has to be, again, be malo shulchan malachim. The reason why is because the last 10, 20 years, there is a phenomena that now every rav is aware of, that during the first 3 months of pregnancy, it is common that a woman will develop a blood clot. They don't call it a blood clot, that's too scary. They call it a hematoma. So that's less scary. So a hematoma in the uterus. So very often, a woman will have staining during the first 3 months of pregnancy, and that's a very, very scary thing, because staining means that she may be going into having a miscarriage, and she has to call the doctor and figure out what's going on. The doctor will come in and say, let's do it. And almost, and I would say, my experience is probably 98% of the time, Erlin, they'll do an ultrasound and it'll come out that everything's fine. And there's a hematoma, there's a blood clot or something in the uterus. And that takes time for it to resolve. So again, it has to be a conversation with the doctor. Whether the staining which took place during the second month is an indication that she should break her fast in the 6 months. But there's no doctor present. If she comes to you in Yom Kippur and there's nothing, then you have to be, she has to eat, has to drink. But let's say she had staining during the fifth month. So then that would be your reason why she should not fast in Yom Kippur. And then the most clear situations are where ochas obulmus, where she goes into dehydration. And then whenever a woman is pregnant, so we always give her simanim. Because a woman who's pregnant is in a predisposition to go into dehydration. So a woman is pregnant, so we first we take the information. Any preterm labor, any pregnancies that ended early, any miscarriages, any staining, any dehydration. Did she dehydrate already? Was she in the hospital for dehydration? Does she wake up every morning and is dizzy or faint or something? So right away, we in those situations, she may have to break her fast and discuss with the doctor. But let's say she says, no, Baruch Hashem, everything's gavaldig. Sometimes she doesn't eat for a while, she'll get a little bit dizzy, so then we'll say, well, is that on active days or non-active days? So then every pregnant woman will say, You have to stay home. You have to stay in bed. You have to have the air conditioning on. And cannot go to shul. If she's feeling gewaldig, by Neila, she's mamish feeling great, not just feeling okay. So and the minion is very, very close by. Or by Kol Nidre, where she's fully, fully hydrated, and it's a short walk, so maybe we'll let her go. But otherwise, she has to take it easy. And then, if over the course of the day, she gets dizzy or faint, and the faintness doesn't go away when she sits down, or it comes while she's sitting down or lying down, or she gets heart palpitations, or she gets some kind of achiness that she associates with dehydration, or some doctors will say if she becomes clammy, if the urine becomes very, very yellowish. So all those are indications of dehydration, and she has to break her fast. Bechlal, we have to understand that dehydration takes a life of its own. In other words, if a person is dehydrating, so it is unwise and unsafe to say, well, right now I'm okay. Right now, I'm a little shach, right? So if they're a little shach, it's not a problem. But if they begin to get dizzy or faint, they say, I could do this for another few hours. I'm okay, right? I often pay for this experience and Six Flags. So I can, this is okay, I'm just coming for free. So that's not a smart thing, because the way dehydration works, it's okay, and then sometimes it takes a deep dive. And then one can no longer walk it back. So if a woman gets early signs of dehydration, she's pregnant, she has to break her fast. And we instruct her to, if it's a little bit of faintness or dizziness, then she can do shiurim. If it's heart palpitations, or if she's going into contractions, or she's having staining, then she just has to drink until as much as she can, as quickly as she can, but she doesn't do shiurim. Shiurim are something that we do if she has early signs of dehydration, dizziness, or faintness, and she experiments and she takes a sip. I wouldn't start within 9 minutes in that case. I would start with like every 6 minutes. If it doesn't go away within half an hour, then I would bump it up to every 4 minutes. If it doesn't go away half an hour, then I'd bump it up every 2 minutes. And if it doesn't go away, then she has to drink regular. But if she's getting contractions or heart palpitations, then she has to drink until the symptom goes away. If a woman feels that the fetal movement is different, then she has to drink without shiurim. Because, again, that's a very, very hard thing to tell a woman. If your wife has been pregnant, then she'll tell you she doesn't know, doesn't remember. But you have to take a suffix l'chumra. If she thinks that the fetal movement has changed and is quieter while she's fasting Yom Kippur, then she has to drink, because you can't take a chance in that. So those are the one situation where Fisher's chumra, many others take as a kula. You know, there was a Fisher who was saying, but in the ninth month, so there we would go the other way. We wouldn't say, let's say a doctor says that she goes into labor, it's fine, because it's the 38th week, we're okay with it. The new study just came out. This is going to be one of the issues you're going to deal with, is Rabbanim. We'll see. We got Ma'al Shulchan Malach. The new study came out just a few weeks ago that it is advisable to induce women at the 39th week, right? Because it lowers the chance of C-section. A C-section is increases sakana. So if your wives are pregnant and they're close to term, many doctors will now say, we are offering, we are suggesting, we're encouraging, if in the schois, to actually induce in the 39th week. So this is going to be, the mahalach of all poiskim until now has been not to induce unless it's medically indicated. Rav Moshe was a very, very strong and difficult tshuva that inducing not only introduces a sakana, but Rav Moshe has a wild tshuva that inducing creates a sakana that otherwise is not there. So we have to Malo Shulchan Malachim now have to discuss, bring Rabbanim together and discuss this and bring doctors together to evaluate this, but it's already made it, this is the new research. But the research has already made it to the clinical setting. So it's already in the doctor's offices. So, but what we're saying is, on Yom Kippur, if a woman goes into labor, so then she has to drink without shirim, just drink and drink. Why? Because labor is a sakonas nefashos, and a woman has to be at the top of her game when she goes into labor. So let's say she goes into labor Yom Kippur afternoon, right before and after Yonah. So this woman has not taken any food in since, so she'll be fine. She'll be fine. She'll come into labor with all the zechiyus of Yom Kippur. Well, and she's not going to be in any greater danger because the doctor said, 38th week, you can deliver, no problem. The lungs will be complete. The bris will probably be, the right will be eaten. It'll be fine. But she's going to labor. She's going to sakonas, so she has to be strong now. So she has to drink. She can't eat. It's too late to eat, but she can drink and should drink as much as she can until she arrives into the labor room. So again, the Yotze Mikol Zeh is that we have to educate women that if they are pregnant, they have to take it easy, they have to rest up, stay at home, and to do a careful intake and discussion and to see whether this woman is in a situation where her particular hirayon, her particular pregnancy is at greater risk, and therefore she has, and therefore that we do paskin. I think Roy Paskin paskin that is a sakonas nefashos, and therefore she has to fast. She has to break her fast in Yom Kippur, and then we would, in most situations, tell her to break it with shiur. Here's an important discussion that the poskim have, and that is a person is ill in Erev Yom Kippur, and the doctor says that this person has to eat in Yom Kippur. So if we have two choices. One choice is that they wake up in the morning and they start doing shiurim, which nobody likes doing shiurim. Right? The shiurim is not a comfortable thing to sit there with a clock and with a shot glass and with at every 9 minutes until one has a liter and a half, they have to come late to shul. So it's not pleasant. But it's a kala kal kaidah. So the doctor says, yeah, they can do shirim. They need to have a liter and a half of fluid. They'll be gavaldic. They'll be fine. They'll be good for the rest of the day. You have orange juice. You have Powerade, Gatorade. Which everyone has ashrach. You have gavaldic. You get all your electrolytes. You get you're in better shape than anybody else. And you're going to come in a chol v'suk, and after that, you're going to be better than half the tzibur. So the guy, but he said the alternative is to fast till after Musaf, to fast if the shul is a break, right? To fast sometime in the afternoon, and then you have to guzzle down a whole power. It's a choice. You can either do shiurim, or you can actually fast for half a day. So what's the din in that case? So I think it's Askamas HaPoiskim. If Shlomo Zalman discusses this, if Ramosha and see Pesach Frank, I think it's Askamas HaPoiskim. That if the doctor is saying there is no question that this person has to drink or eat Yom Kippur, then you do Shiurim. The doctor is saying this person, if you see him during the break and he's still sticking out, you are Mechuyiv to go to him and tell him to go home, then he should do Shiurim. But if the doctor is saying, I don't think he'll make it through. I think he'll feel schwach. But Lu Yitzuyer, he feels gewaldig. Lu Yitzuyer, he's here by the break, great air conditioning, and he's in good shape. He's not turning colors, and he's davening with Avren. I don't keep on. He may make it. I don't know if he'll make it. He may make it. If there's a tzadshul sofek that he can make it through the fast, and the doctor gives him a pass on it. So then it's better to take your chances and to fast, the fast and the fast. Oh, but if you can't fast, then you break, and even though you won't be breaking with shiur. Because both are, whatever happens, it'll be mutter. But we only take the chance, we only do the shiur in the chachila if it's vadai, then they're going to break their fast. If there's some suffix that they may make it through, then one does not do the shurim. Then one rather fast the several hours and then drink without shurim later on. Okay? But meidach, if one's for sure going to be eating, so then better do the shurim than to fast for several hours. There is a discussion which is about the very, very beginning of pregnancy. We are in a situation now where we established pregnancy much earlier than it was ever established, right? Until the 1900s, so no one, either everyone thought they were always pregnant, or they never knew until they began to show, right? There's a mahalach in Europe. The mahalach was that women didn't fast except for on Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur. But that anias daiti, that's because women were always either they were pregnant or they were nursing, right? There wasn't they were not contraceptives. So they're always in the matzav. They never knew when they were pregnant enough. So then they couldn't fast. Tishrei and Kippur, you have to shut up. What's going on? But nowadays we know much earlier than ever before. So now a woman is in very early stage of pregnancy. So there is a Rabbi Yaakov Emden in Moruk Tzia that says that at the very beginning of pregnancy, even in the first 40 days, so there is a greater chashash that dehydration could cause a problem. And the Shev HaLevi does deal with that seriously. It might be a serious issue. Again, I'm not making hachra on that. And then there is a comment that Abavad Yosef has, he quotes with Shem Shlomo Zalman, that if a woman has IVF, and then the early parts of pregnancy are, the early weeks of pregnancy are more precarious, and dehydration could have a serious impact. So if I remember correctly, I think Shlomo Zalman would say that for a woman who had IVF during the very early part of pregnancy to eat, drink pachis v'kashir. But all this has to be reevaluated because IVF now is a much different phenomena than it was in the time of Shlomo Zalman. And we have to reevaluate with medical information. I assume this nekuda hasn't changed, but we have to reevaluate. Then the question comes up, a woman's a menekes. A woman is a nursing mother. So a nursing mother, there are two concerns that we have. A nursing mother is in a greater predisposition to dehydrating because she's putting out fluids. And you have a baby who needs to drink. So a woman over the course of the tonus is probably going to dry up. She'll come to the tonus very well hydrated. Nursing at night will not be a problem at all. Nursing first thing in the morning will be a problem at all, but somewhere in the later morning, early afternoon, she may have trouble nursing. So we have two concerns. One is the woman might dehydrate. Okay. So l'chara, that she has to watch herself. And she follows the regular simon of dehydration. And if the woman has any signs of dehydration, she has to drink. The other, and she'll drink with shurim, she'll probably be fine. The other concern is the baby is not getting. So bizmanenu onu, we have all of these alternatives. First of all, the woman who's nursing may be able to store up milk and frozen mother's milk in the freezer. Very, very common. Okay, so then that's one possibility. Other possibility is that to use a formula. So that's what we would do to get a woman, get the baby through. Now, question is, what happens if this baby never had formula before? So woman calls up and says, my baby doesn't take formula. So you have to push a little bit. You know what happened? And find out whether it's really true. They never have a formula, right? And when you go to work, never have a formula, right? You have tickets to a Yishai Rebo concert. So what's the deal? You're going to leave. You're going to forgo the concert? You got tickets? So are you going to try formula? So if you're going to try formula for the concert, you got to try formula for Yom Kippur, you know? You have to... So that's one conversation. But let's say she says, no, Rabbi, I never give formula. So then there are two mahalchim. I believe the haskamas of poiskim is that you say, you have to try formula. Right? You have to try to see. If the baby doesn't take it, okay? So you have a baby and never had formula. You try it. It's a one-time deal. Doesn't take it. You used up your frozen milk and it's not taking formula. Then you have to, and you have nothing to give the baby. Then it's a sakana for the baby. Then you have to drink. In order, the baby should have what to eat. Okay? That's a posha that I'm sakana sefasha for somebody else. I do what I have to do. There is a legend, Chazon Ish, that says that the Gemara says, Shini Meayim is Hascholah Sakana. That if a baby has a certain diet, to change diet, that's the beginning of a sakana. So, I say it's an alleged Chazon Ish because it's a very, very hard Chazon Ish to understand, because the Gemara is discussing Hascholas Me'ayim of a baby who's not well. So there is a debate. The Shlomo Zalman does mention this Chazon Ish. I believe he shares a little bit of a suffix whether Chazon Ish really said it or not. But like any Mesaira, any questionable Mesaira, there are those who say it is a Chazon Ish, and therefore we semech on it. And there are those who say that it's not strong enough Masera. Zilberstein, in his Sefer, Torah HaYeledes, so he says that the Chazon Ish was said for a baby who's not well, and that's how Rabbi Yosef reports it. I believe the Chuv Tanagos also reports it that way. So, again, Tzarachian, whether one can be samech on the Chazon Ish. And Lechaira, one should be very, very careful before, because it's questionable whether the Chazon Ish really said it the way that it's being reported. Of course, Yeledes herself, for the first 3 days, the Shulchan Aruch says, Loises Anish, she should not fast. There is a discussion amongst the poskim what happens if she's a very, very powerful woman. She's already had her seventh, eighth pregnancy. And she said, Rabbi, I can do it, it's not a problem. I know how I feel. So is she mukhruch that she has to, she mukhuyiv to eat or not? So I believe that the Moshe Sternbach says that if she's very, very strong-willed and she's willing to watch herself very, very carefully, we would not force her to eat. And I believe that the Abiya Omer is less tolerant. It says that she's mechuyevesti. After how you measure the 3 days is a machlekes, whether it's...
I had a shayla last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, this shayla.
Yeah, yeah. No, what happened?
I said
that
the
tushita. So how do you have mechuyev?
I think like
the mechuyev. Okay.
I think that's...
You're the Savi, no, but the 72 or 70.
Yeah,
and the question is like this: whether how do you measure the 3 days, right? Do you measure the 3 days as within mix of Yom Kukuloi or 72 hours, right? So that's the Machlekes Apoiskim, whether it's within the 72 hours, but it's not within the third day, right? That's the other way around.
The third day passes. Let's say she gave birth at noon, so that first day is already a day.
Yeah.
And then 2 more days. It's really like 48, it's really only 55 hours.
Right.
60 hours.
Right.
What do you
say? Even the 72 hours.
72 hours.
All right. So that's Mishnah Berurah's Mako for the 72 hours. But it could come out a very strange thing. It could come out that this woman can eat kol nidre night, but she has to start fasting. Because once the 72 hours are up, they're up. So from third day through the seventh day, so then that depends on how she's feeling. That if she's feeling well, then she has to fast, and if she's feeling shvach, then she wouldn't. But that depends on whether what she's up to. Right? But the first 3 days, so then that's the din of we would say it's machlokes whether yisana leisasana. If a woman has a C-section. or she's suffering still from some of the anesthetic that she got, so then that extends the time, and that has to be discussed with doctors. A person who has a hapola, rachman al-islan, a person who has a miscarriage. So the Rabbi Yosef points out that there's a machlekes between the Marsham and the, I think this is the Chemin, whether she has a din of a yeledes, or whether she's whether she has if it's within the first 40 days, then we would not give her the din of a yeledes. She's like a regular chaylim. We have to evaluate it. The suffek of the 40 days or not. So then it's also machlekes apayskin whether we're mekel. The sefer the base avi. I think there's Yisuk Libis. I think it's mekel in that case if it's suffek. But if it's after the 40 days, so then as a machlek is a poiskim, whether we give the din of your lettuce, and either it would depend on how she's doing. One of the questions comes up in our time more than other times, what about psychotropic drugs? All right. So let's say a person's on a regimen. Certain things are easy to call. Person's on lithium, so again, you have to always evaluate this with the doctor because so many situations are different, the times change. So lithium, usually if a person's on lithium, so to go off the lithium, even for a day, could be a sakana of going into depression, usually. And lithium itself is a very powerful dehydrator. So that person will usually have to drink, and again, I forget, I have to discuss with the psychiatrist whether that is shiurim or not shiurim. But let's say, take the example where a person on a psychotropic drug, and if they don't take it for a day, either they could go into withdrawal, rachman v'tzlan. So clearly then, they can be a sakon of having a psychotic attack. So you have to, again, evaluate. Usually depression is seen as a chaylim v'sukkah, either because the machla itself is a sakana, or a person could, God forbid, hurt themselves as a result of going to depression. And again, depression is not the kind of thing where a person can just decide to walk back. It's not like, okay, I'll go into depression over Yom Kippur, and then I'll, let's say Yom Kippur, I'll take my medication. It doesn't work like that. Rachman al-Islam. But depression is something that one loses control, one doesn't have control over the mind at that time. So depression has to be avoided, and it has the category of a chaylim v'sukkah. So the doctor says that if you can tweak the medication, fine, but if you can't, then that is in the category of a chodesh yesh basakana. Now, very often these pills are very small and they can be swallowed without any water. It's well, and then sometimes the pill needs a little bit of water to be swallowed. So the pill itself is, both Moshe wrote and Shechti Yibon Mechaim Mechaim point out that it's not eating, it's not food. Shechti says it's like swallowing a stone. So it's not even, if Shechti told it's not even Yisad Rabbanon. It's not most hold that medication being achilu shaloi kedarkos, it's a nisad rabbanon. I think Shach told even less than that. That's if one can take it. But if one, if it gets stuck in one's throat, and one can't take it, it'll scratch one's throat, so then one wants a little bit of water. That's already l'chayra and achilu kedarka. One could say no. One could say that taking a little bit of water with a stone is also shaloi kedarka. So, this is the one situation where I would suggest that a person makes the water into something that's not roi lachila, right? In other words, usually we never tell a person, doctors, you have to drink, okay? You're drinking salt water the entire day, right? The person's allowed to drink, allowed to drink. We don't tell them to do an achila shalei kedarka. This is the one situation where it's a hard call. The person doesn't know if it'll go down, it won't go down. So there I say, and it's a very easy solution where I will tell a person that they should take, put a little bit of mouthwash in the water, a little bit of flat cloak or coke or something, and have an ashtiyah shleika darka. It becomes even more, I would advocate even stronger in the situation where people are on ADD and ADHD drugs. So a parent will call up and say that if my child doesn't take the medication, so they'll be different things will happen. Either they'll be totally out of it, they'll be staring at space for the entire day. That's not a sakana. Or they'll be climbing the walls all of the day. Also not a sakana necessarily, right? Not easy. So is there any heta to... So that's hard to find the kula, that they should take that medication. Take the medicine without any water, nope, that's not a problem. Shachter also does mutter. But let's say they said, well, my kid can't take it without drinking. So now you're in a difficult zone. There's nobody, you haven't really mocked drinking in that case. So that's the situation. Why are we trying to find the cool in that case? So it becomes more complex. You have a kid in shul, and the kid's already 15 or 16 or whatever, maybe a little bit younger, and they're going to be staring at the space all Yom Kippur, right? Or they're going to be out in the hall. Since the kid is a regular kid, because they're on medication all the time, and they're fine, a regular kid, the kid who learns and davens, and all that comes Yom Kippur, and they're playing cards in the hallway. So the kid's going to be terribly embarrassed. It's going to be feel terrible that and the mice, they can't. It's not they're not choosing not to sit. This child cannot. That's not a. They're not making a choice not to sit. So the child's coming and saying, "I want to take my medication. I can have Yom Kippur. I'm going to be terribly embarrassed. Shabbos, Sukkot, whole shul's going to remember that on Yom Kippur." This kid was couldn't sit still. See, so that's a rachmanistic situation. So that's a situation where I would say, again, it can be malu shulchan alachem, whether I'm right or not, that they should take the medication, but then they have to take it with water that doesn't taste good. It doesn't have to be vile. It has to be that they just shouldn't be water they would normally drink. These are all situations where I would say try these things before Yom Kippur. Now, if a person wants to take these, it's a tiny, tiny pill, I'll get it down. Try it before Yom Kippur. You don't have a pill stuck in your throat in Yom Kippur. So you try it before Yom Kippur, and you see, does it go down or not? Okay. Or you try you don't have Yom Kippur, that a person has a vile taste in time Kippur. So you try and you work it up before Yom Kippur. That would be a situation where I think we should be makel for the first. You had a question. I don't know your name. Sorry.
What about a situation where it's a kid who's just bar mitzvah, and if they're acting so crazy to affect their parents'
time? Say it again. And the what?
If they're acting so crazy to affect their parents' ability to fast.
So when you say their ability to fast, it means if it. To take the pill, not a problem. To take it with water. So then, so you're talking about taking a pill, the shalei kederach, a dover shein eroy l'achila, basically. A dover shein eroy l'achila. So that might not even be an issur de rabbanon. So my initial impression would be that would be if it means that the parents can sit in shul and daven, I would think that's kedai. Yeah, I think that my other chesh is also true. If the reason why the parents aren't shul is because the child is so difficult, that's hard. When that becomes known in the tzibur, it becomes like a stigma for the child. It's not easy to walk the upset. It has to be taken very seriously. Yeah.
What about collecting saliva in one's mouth to swallow a pill? Is that fine, like better than mouthwash?
It's better than it's the same as mouthwash, l'chayr, right? So davar sheni roi l'achila, right? Better than mouthwash. It's the same as mouthwash, l'chayr. L'chayr is the same thing. Yeah. Good. Okay. So I can thank you for the opportunity to chazer these halachas and to raise some of the questions you're going to come up with and have a chance to learn together.
Okay. Thank you, Abby.